Welcome back to Drive Time Sports on KOAL 107.3 FM and 7:50 AM, Eastern Utah's home for the Utah Jazz.
We're going to talk NBA basketball. Typically something that we do on Mondays. We push that back a day this week as we gear up for the NBA playoffs. In fact, we got the play-in round going down tonight. Couple of games tonight, couple of games tomorrow. Actually, some really interesting matchups. I think the playoffs are going to be really fun. I think the play-in rounds are going to be fun. We're going to talk about that. We'll talk about the end of the regular season. Joining us right now over the phone, as he does each week, we have James Holas, our NBA analyst. And James, it's great to get you back on. And as I had mentioned to you when we first hopped on, I am very happy that the regular season is over.
Yeah, it's been a long slog, man. It really is a grind for different reasons, right? For me, for the Celtics, I've been kind of just waiting since, you know, November, December. It's all about that title defense. While I get other teams to worry about seeding, and just 82 games is a lot.
82 games is a lot, and with the play-in round, and this is something I never really thought of, but with the play-in round and taking the top 10 teams from each conference, the bottom five teams that don't make it, a few of them in the Western Conference, and well, you can say this in the Eastern Conference as well, they weren't even sniffing the play-in round. It's even longer, right, when you know that there are five teams in the conference that are just god-awful, they don't necessarily want to win, and they play poor basketball over the final 3 to 4 months of the season, especially after the trade deadline. It's just painful with this play-in round, maybe more so than when we only took eight teams, because I think that bottom five really stands out as just being dreadful at this point.
Yeah, I can see what you mean, man. And you know, as a team, if you're someone who understands tanking, and I can support it, you know, in context in certain situations, I can still understand that if you're in a market of a team that's decided that we need to be as bad as possible, you're going to see some really bad basketball March and April, and it's you're taking your medicine, right? Somebody got to take your medicine.
When you look at a team like the Utah Jazz, who somehow they close out the year with the worst record in the NBA, which, by the way, 17 wins. I'm going to have to go back and actually do some research. We've seen teams win 10, 11 games. For 17 to be the worst in the NBA tells me that on any given night, with the amount of load management that we've seen, you can just about beat anyone in the NBA. That was one of the things that stood out to me.
Yeah, that, and also the rise of the three-pointer has made no lead safe. And even a bad team can get hot on the right day and beat a good team or beat at least a mediocre team. The NBA definitely changed. So 17 wins being the worst in the league, like you said, I think it kind of does speak to the parity in the league. And, like, you know, there's talent. Hey, look, let's be real. The Jazz have talent. They're not, you know, they had to make some machinations and moves to actually lose some of those games, right? They were sitting guys strategically, and perfectly healthy guys weren't seeing the court. So it is what it is.
For those teams, and again, we can talk about three in particular, the Hornets, Wizards, and Jazz. The next key date that you need to remember is May 12th, Monday, May 12th, because that's when the NBA lottery comes trickling down in Chicago. If you are one of those three bottom feeders and you don't get Cooper Flagg, what a disgusting season this really turned out to be, right? I mean, you and I have talked about some of the talent that we like outside of Cooper Flagg, but let's be real. All three of those teams want the kid from Duke.
Sure, and I get it, but from what I understand, you know, I'm not a real draft NCAA guy. There are some other juicy picks in the top three or four, you know, so it's not Cooper Flagg, and even Cooper Flagg, I have a few questions about the level he's going to reach, but he's going to be a really good player, you know, all-star level type guy, it looks like. But it is what it is, man. This is the bite in the apple, right? I think Philly overdid it when they went all in on the process.
Yeah.
You can't do it to that extent. I think the basketball gods will end up biting you for it, and Philly's kind of paying for that. But you got to do it. If you don't have a chance to sign the big-name free agents, you don't have a sign to woo guys in free agency, you don't have the chips to trade for a superstar, this is how you do it, you know?
James, let's talk about the teams that will be playing, specifically in the play-in round. Okay, so we have eight total. In the Western Conference, Golden State, Memphis, Sacramento, Dallas. We jump over to the Eastern Conference, Orlando, Atlanta, Chicago, Miami. Out of the eight teams I just talked about, in your mind, who can cause the biggest fits, not in the play-in round, but in the playoffs as well? Who's the team that you're looking at and saying, I don't know if I'd want to play this team?
Orlando. Those two big guys they got down there and the way they play, they've been counterintuitive to the rest of the league, right? They don't shoot a lot of threes. Their offense can be really clunky, but they have two really big creators, and defensively they can be suffocating. So they're a team that, you know, I think they beat the Celtics with, like, none of their starting three or four, like, their best three or four players out because the way they defend and the way they make teams uncomfortable. They're super physical. You know, that's probably the team. I think, you know, Atlanta, I think, could be a pass, but Orlando, they got something brewing special there.
I'm a little bit surprised you didn't say Golden State.
I don't worry about Golden State, man. They're too small. I still don't. I get that Jimmy Butler's kind of reinvigorated them, but we also saw Steph Curry's getting a little older. With defensive discipline, you can kind of keep him corralled, and even if he goes for 30 or 40, you can make sure it's something that the Celtics are really good at. You can let one or two guys go off, but you have the game plan discipline to make sure that everyone else gets their water cut off. So, yeah, I'm not too concerned about Golden State.
If the Warriors do get a win, they knock off Memphis, they get Houston in a seven-game set. You don't think they can cause any problems at all for Houston?
For Houston, yes, because Houston, I think, has a team that has certain flaws.
Yeah.
Alpo, you know, Sanguine, how do you pronounce his last name?
Yeah, you're right.
Yep, Alpo was he's a very, very good big man. Not great defensively, pretty good positionally, but he's not like super quick. And he can score around the rim. He's a nice crafty big man, in the vein of almost like a poor man's Joker. And we know Jalen Green is an explosive kind of bucket getter, kind of a volume kind of guy. But both of those guys can be up and down a little bit. They don't have a true blue, like, certified bucket getter. Or a guy who makes other guys around them better. So their defense has been really, really good. You tip your hat to Coach Ime Udoka about how he's got those guys playing defense. They're tough. They're physical. Another team that's really physical. But I do worry that their offense, when if Jalen Green's not going off or if Alpo's not on the court, I worry that their offense really grinds to a halt.
Yeah, and we had mentioned Sengun, right, a couple of weeks ago. You and I talked about him and the idea that he got a guy that's shooting 50% from the field, a 19-10 type guy. It was you that actually pointed out, hey, there's got to be context to that as well, right? I mean, he does have some flaws when he's out there on the floor. Let's be real.
He does. And, like, again, he will get his buckets. He will bully guys smaller than him. He has a nice scoring package around the rim, but he doesn't space the floor. And, a guy like Draymond Green with his veteran know-how and then a guy like Kevon Looney with his size and his physicality, there's a good chance that they bottle him up. The big advantage Golden State has on a team like Houston is just that corporate knowledge, right, that corporate know-how. They know the little tricks it takes to get a bucket, the little tricks it takes to cut off another team's water. They know they're going to be well-coached enough to scout out. They know how to sniff out that little backdoor action and steal the ball. So that's why I think the little tricks of the trade where Golden State is going to beat a team like Rockets. They're going to beat them out the margins.
The other team of the Western Conference that on paper, they look a lot better than where they're at. And I shouldn't even say that. I mean, we're talking about teams that hovered around 50 wins. The Memphis Grizzlies, and I know that there are some problems, obviously, right, by firing Taylor Jenkins. But when we talk about size come postseason and we talk about perimeter scoring, James, they have a little bit of everything. They really do. And I think Zach Edey being here on the biggest stage now, I can't wait to see what he does in his first postseason. I want to see this Grizzly team get into the playoffs because, I mean, I don't know how long the series goes against Oklahoma City or maybe they get in against Houston. I don't know how long the series goes. But I feel like when I look at this team on paper, they are much better than what we have seen them perform.
So I don't know how to read Memphis, man. It's really tough because, like you said, they have the pieces. John can play like a superstar.
Yep.
You know that Triple J is a very, very good player, right? All NBA type big man. We know they have they play with some guts. You know, I'm hammering the word. They can be physical. They play fearless, but they just haven't been good.
No.
And to fire your coach 2 weeks, you know, before the playoffs start, it's very telling. And John, the stuff about the grenade and the celebrations, like, that's not about basketball. Where's your mind? Where's your focus? And like they're in the play-in, right? They were number two in the West up until what, December ish, maybe mid like January, and now they're in the play-in. They have not been playing well. I want to say they were 13-18 in their last 30 odd games. So something. You know, I'm fascinated. I want to see when the stories really start coming out about what's going on in that locker room. I do know. I noticed that there's a definite line of demarcation. I want to say they were like 28-12 before they traded Jake LaRavia.
Yeah.
Or something, or maybe even 38-12 or some nonsense when they traded Jake LaRavia on February 8th. And, you know, I'm not saying he is the key, but there's certain times. Like he was only averaging 7-4-3 or something. He was a great shooter from three. And, like, sometimes some guys just kind of lubricate the offense and make things kind of go, and they hold that locker room together. So I'm just curious. I'm not saying Jake LaRavia is the savior, but there's been a clear line of demarcation for that team, and they just haven't been playing well. So let's see if they can turn it around here against the Golden State Warriors.
I mean, again, this goes back to a conversation that we have had multiple times. It's not always the big moves. We always talk about the big moves, but it's not always the big moves that propel a team come postseason time, right? I think we can almost make the comparison to the Cleveland Cavaliers. You and I have spent a lot of time talking about the DeAndre Hunter deal. If we go back and we look over the course of history at the trade deadline, there have been little moves that have really propelled teams. Well, we can look at your Boston Celtics, right? Nobody was really talking about Jrue Holiday coming to Boston. That was not the big move. The big move was a Damian Lillard trade that was kind of facilitated by everything that went down that offseason. Sometimes it's not the big marquee move that can propel teams. There's locker room aspects to this thing. There's some cohesiveness. There's chemistry. And sometimes that doesn't get talked about enough, James.
I absolutely agree with you, and let's talk about the other move, because Jrue is what was the kind of underrated move that people like to talk about. Let's talk about it. The season before, or two seasons before, Derek White.
Derek White, 100%.
They got Derek White for, you know, mid first round pick that wasn't working out, and a couple, you know, maybe a couple seconds or whatever it was, and people said it was too an overpay. And Derek White is now a premier, you know, borderline all star. So. But, yeah, it's not always the big splashy move. Again, let's look at the Phoenix Suns, right? You got those three – you brought those three stars in, Kevin Durant and then a guy like Devin Booker, and you add a guy like Bradley Beal, and it all falls apart. It's not about – sometimes the basketball is not just a spreadsheet, and it's more about stats up on the board, and it's more about, like, the team culture and chemistry.
He's James Holis again joining us right now as we talk about the playoffs. Again, the play-in round will get underway tonight. We get two games, Atlanta-Orlando, Memphis-Golden State. And then tomorrow, we flip to the bottom half. We get Chicago-Miami, and then we'll get Sacramento-Dallas. Dallas is one of the teams that I think is entertaining from a standpoint of, if they were healthy, they obviously wouldn't be the 10th spot, right, if you had Kyrie Irving. But you do have a healthy Anthony Davis, and I would envision Dallas knocking off Sacramento, which means they would get the loser of Golden State and Memphis. Does Dallas intrigue you at all in this postseason, at all?
No, they don't. If they had Kyrie Irving, sure, but they don't. I guess the only thing kind of compelling, can Anthony Davis dig down somewhere and find a superstar turn, right? If he can find a 10-game run where he just plays out of his mind and can really make some kind of noise, that'd be interesting, right? It'd be definitely interesting if he can, let's say, Anthony Davis find something and they catch lightning in a bottle for a few games. But we do know that the team like the Miami Heat AC is more the exception, not the rule. So I don't expect too much out of that.
The other storyline of the Western Conference, we do have two teams that'll be in the play-in round or the postseason or the playoffs, however you want to word it, with interim coaches. The Nuggets, I haven't talked to you since Mike Malone got the axe.
This NBA season has so many different little things around the edges, like this, the Mike Malone story in Denver and Calvin Booth. We talked a little bit about the coach in Memphis, Taylor Jenkins, but like it's you got the best player in the NBA. I can't think of a comparison where you have a player at the level of Joker. You have a team that won a championship less than 2 years ago, right? Less than 24 months ago, they won a championship. And they fired their head coach, who has been there for a decade and was like, you know, I want to say behind Pop and like Spo, he was like the most tenured coach in the NBA. I'm excited for the HBO expose story to come out, you know, the documentary on what really went down there.
I've always had the mindset that if you have the best player in the league or you have one of the top three players in the league, And you have home court advantage at some point in time of the postseason. I've seen crazy things happen in the NBA playoffs. We've seen crazy things happen in the NBA playoffs. I thought it was premature from the idea of there's no way that can create a better locker room environment at this stage in the season, right? That's what was so odd to me. And maybe I'm completely off on that. But in my mind, you have a championship coach. You have Jokic. I call him the best player in the NBA. If you get Jamal Murray back at 70% of where he was a couple of years ago, why not in this Western Conference? It's wide open. I think that's what was so puzzling to me.
The reason I'm going to push back against that specific case a little bit, because you don't need Jamal Murray at 70%. You need Jamal Murray to be a superstar.
Yeah, fair enough.
The Nuggets are at their best, and they are dangerous. But not only is Joker being Joker, which we know is going to happen, he's going to give you your 35 and 15 rebounds and maybe 17 assists, maybe. But you got to have somebody to go with him. And otherwise, they're going to be very beatable, like we saw last year when the Minnesota Timberwolves kind of took him off the board because he was banged up, him being Jamal Murray, because he was banged up and then he just couldn't get any separation. So 7% Jamal Murray, it's not going to do it. They've lost too much talent around the edges. And, we've talked enough about who they lost in the offseason, but they don't have enough guys. So they would have to have Jamal Murray operate as a superstar for them to have a real chance. Now, can it happen? Absolutely. We've seen him. He's a playoff riser. It has to happen, though, or the Nuggets are going to be dead in the water.
Am I off by saying he's about 70%? That's what he looks like to me.
I could see that, because he does have he'll have a game where he'll drop 35.
Yep.
I don't know. I don't know if it's conditioning. I don't know if it's a lingering issue. But then, yeah, he has games where he looks like he can barely move. He'd have to come back, and like while he was out, he was really taking care of his wind, his conditioning, and he has to ramp up the speed quick because they don't have time.
James, what's your favorite playoff matchup? 1 through 6. All right, we can't even say 1 through 6. We can say 4 through 5, 3 to 6, 4, 5. What's your favorite matchup?
See, you're always asking these kind of questions, and you don't give me the matchup.
I'll give you the matchup in the Western.
Don't we have who do we have? Is it Pacers, Knicks?
Let's start the Eastern Conference. Let's start the Eastern Conference. So if we go that 3-6 matchup, we get the Knicks Pistons, then we get the Pacers Bucks.
Okay, I like Knicks Pistons because obviously the Pistons are such a feel good story, and they're genuinely good. They are a good basketball team. Cade has been playing like a superstar. I like that one a lot. So the Knicks, I think, have maybe underperformed a little bit this year, relative to expectations. And then you got a team like Detroit that has exploded through all expectations. I think it'll be a good, physical, just like grinding matchup. I like it.
Is it fair to say, though, if Milwaukee suffers an early exit, that we see this franchise maybe just rip it down? Because they have the ability to do that in the offseason if they so choose.
They do, and again, man, injuries are a bummer, right? Because with Dame and Giannis, they would have a puncher's chance against almost everyone, I think. But I also don't want them to have the excuse of, well, Dame is out, and they do have that excuse, right? They went from it's amazing how quickly things turn. They just won a championship a few years ago themselves.
Yep, they did.
And now they're at the point where it's just Giannis and a bunch of kind of journeymen because his co-star, superstar, is hurt. And his co-star superstar is already aging. Like it's quick. It's amazing how like the expiration date on championship window how fast it can just deteriorate. So that's why that matchup is a little bit it's I'm not there's not a lot of juice to that matchup when it's Giannis by himself playing against the Pacers team.
We go to the West, Lakers Timberwolves. I like this matchup right out of the gate, but then that 4-5 matchup. I'm also pretty intrigued by because the Clippers are playing good basketball and they get the Denver Nuggets that we just talked about. I think the West gives us two really, really good first-round matchups right there.
Oh, absolutely, man. I think the Clippers, again, if Jamal Murray's not back looking like Jamal Murray, they might be done because Zubac is the perfect guy who can stop Joker, but Zubac has the size to contain him and make him work at the other end. So that's going to be a really good matchup. But, yeah, the Lakers, man, that's the one I'm watching. That Lakers and who are they playing?
Minnesota.
Sorry, Timberwolves. Duh. Because my big thing with the Lakers is sure Jackson Hayes has been playing as well as you can expect him to, even above and beyond. But the sheer size and physicality of the Timberwolves, I want to see how that works. And then you got Anthony Edwards by himself. Obviously, the Lakers are you can throw together a junk defense to kind of anyone but Ant beat us. Can Julius Randle redeem himself? He's been a playoff dropper. Can, you know, I know that the Lakers are probably favored, you know. People are the Lakers, Luka and LeBron, different. But the Timberwolves, man, the Timberwolves have been playing very well the second half of the season, and they have a little chip on their shoulder.
Yeah, I think for me, one of the big storylines in this is, what kind of a series does Rudy Gobert have, right? How do the Lakers neutralize him? You mentioned Julius Randle. I want to talk about Rudy, though, because this is going to be one of those rare playoff series where he is undoubtedly the best big in this series. I don't think it's even close.
I can't argue with you there. He has the hardware in the resume, and we also know that certain matchups give him a really hard time. If teams space him out and make him pull him away from the rim, he can really struggle. So can the Lakers make enough shots, and can their perimeter guys do enough damage with Rudy on the perimeter to maybe get him off the court?
I can't recall the last time the Western Conference has been this wide open. East, again, to me, it's chalk. It's going to be Boston, Cleveland in the Western Conference. I could see this going a hundred different ways. To me, it all depends on the matchups. I think it's great basketball. I think it's great for the league because it's been a long time since we've been able to say that.
And it's funny because we're wrapping up here in a little bit, but we didn't even mention the OKC Thunder.
No, we haven't talked about them. No, that's the only team of the Western Conference we haven't talked about. 68-win team. I know that towards the end of the season, they won four games at the end of the year. And legitimately, those were four games that did not have a lot of meaning, right? They close out winning 8 of 10, and they had the one seed locked up for about the last month and a half.
Yeah, and that's what I like. I do like the fact that they didn't take the foot off the gas. They didn't start sitting guys. 68 wins is a huge accomplishment. And they don't just beat teams. They beat teams handily. They blow teams out. So they feel a little bit like Boston did last year, or maybe even a few years ago before Boston had that kind of down season. Then they made the finals. And so either way, they feel like they're a team on the rise, like they're about to turn a corner. I know it takes a little more experience. You know, I think customarily we see a couple deep playoff runs and disappointments before it happened. The last year with their first real sniff. So, are they still another year away? That's what I feel. But they're also a team that's super talented. They're deep. They're superstars. Are legit superstars. The MVP. Then they have other high level guys. Can those high level guys actually pull the weight they need to pull in the playoffs? That's the question, right? So, interesting team to watch. And I think I know you said the West is open. It's OKC's to lose.
He's James Holis again, kind enough to join us today as we talk about the NBA playoffs. Again, playing around, picking up tonight. James, always a pleasure to get you on. We got to talk about where we can find more of you, because you got to be a little bit more active on Twitter, right, with the playoffs coming. This is your time to shine, man. This is what you do.
Man, I have been just soaking it up, and I'm probably not doing the social media stuff the way I used to, because I actually sit there and just like watch the game and really enjoy it, instead of like posting my thought and missing the play here or there. But you can find me on X and Where the Sky is Blue at Snotty Dripping. And I will be more active now because we have a lot more concise analysis. We have matchups. We have game over game analysis to look at. And for me, it's just for the love of the game, baby. It's for the love of the game.
Looking forward to it, James. Always a pleasure to get you on. Thank you again.
You're the man, brother. Thank you. Let's go.
Let's pause once again. More Drive Time Sports coming up. We are live from the Sutherland Studios, and it's here on 107.3 FM and 750 AM.